I'm Ashley of X of Words.
I'm Tilly Fertile.
And I'm Carla Dan.
Hey everybody, welcome to the big crossover we are calling Referential 97. So go listen to Khalid's podcast, and this is also Words 97. We have great nerd guests talking to us about X-Men 97, the nostalgia cartoon that we are loving, slash hating, slash crying about, slash obsessed with, slash don't want to be obsessed with.
Let's go, go, go. Gentlemen and everyone beyond and between, the breeze is back. The platinum sacred sealed silk press is also back.
Oh my goodness.
We're doing something special today in honor of this very momentous occasion with the return of the one and the only Omega level mutant for the first time in 97 session history. We're welcoming a returning third chair. You've heard her on episode one. And if you haven't, immediately pause this and go back and fix that error. She is an icon of the nerd fandom. She is the one. She is the number two. She is the number three and the 97. She is Tiffy, the Star Child. Yay! Hi, Tiffy!
Hi! With my camera off, y'all couldn't see all the posing I was doing over here. I was giving a work, just so that you know.
No, I felt it. Did you give us the old storm, just like the...
I was just like, bam, bam, my hair is long now. I threw my weave on for no reason, even though, like, it was crazy. Everything happened at once. Hi!
Hi, Tiffy!
Ash, you want to give us a little intro? Tell the people what they're listening to.
Hi, this is 97. This is the crossover between X of Words and Referential, where we talk about X-Men 97. And it's me, it's Khalid, it's a guest, it's Tiffy, and it's mutants, and it's
X-Men. I'm wondering, does everybody feel the trepidation in Ash's voice? Because I feel like he knows there's something coming. just for all of y'all worried, I want you to know that despite Ash's protestations, despite everything that he's tried to do, despite him sneaking in, going behind my back in the DMs, the Storm impression will not be killed by the likes of him. That hatefulness, and today I'm gonna show out.
A lot of people will be scared here. A lot of people will be scared, and I'll name them.
It'll drop when you least expect it. What's up?
All right. Look, listen, you... Chase the joy in your heart, you know? Don't let me get in your way.
Chase the joy in your heart.
I'll push you out of my way if I have to.
Storm!
So, how are we all feeling? Life Death Part 2 finally dropped. How is everybody feeling? Let's give our general first impressions before we really get into it. Let's start with Ash. What do you think of this episode?
It's good. It's getting wilder. Mm-hmm. And I'm enjoying it still.
How about you, Tiffy?
I thought it was great. I think especially after last week's episode, we deserve something. I was owed compensation. And I feel like this episode delivered.
See, I think I'm like split a bit between you. I like the episode, but I do have some definite issues with it. I think I have to parse out through some feelings. I'm trying to remember the mantra that Ash taught me. Head empty, accept what it is, just enjoy the ride. But I'm getting bits of me coming back, they want to judge things.
It's Dino Nuggets, man. I might not have ordered it, but they're good.
Disney a little Gambit magic. Little cayenne, little time.
You know what? I got to give it to them. At least from the start, I was hyped because I saw Nightcrawler is finally back in the intro, or is in the intro for the first time. So that's great. I like the idea of how they're refreshing the intro over and over again.
That's me. I'll never hit that skip intro little button. Don't even insult me. Why is this on my screen? I will watch this intro every single time. And the way that they ushered Gambit right on out and they said, okay, well, you're done. Oh, and no. We're going to put in the blue guy. So you're up next. You're in.
Tiffy.
Yeah.
I've been skipping.
So you mean to tell me that these animators and this creative team that put so much work into giving this gift to us, so far into the detail of the stories they craft, that they give us more in the intro before we even get into the show itself? They're giving us in the intro, letting us know what we can look forward to, what has changed. You didn't know that they took Magneto and Gambit out and put Nightcrawler in, that from the beginning we've been getting a fresh intro.
So thank you for coming and listening to the session. This has been excellent. My name has been Ashley. It's over, and I've been so alone.
this is a sadness I've never known. Not Ash is firing. Tiffy came on the show to fire Ash.
My box is full. It's been a pleasure. I will see you all around.
Elsewhere on the internet.
And with that, should we break to recap?
Yes.
Tiffy, do you want to give us the recap?
So the intro starts with, no, I won't do that to you, Ash, because you said that you don't watch the intro. But
actually, no, we should talk about it because this intro started with, like, did we have to start with watching Xavier and Lalandra get together?
It is not your turn. It is not your turn to talk about what happens in the episode.
I'm sorry. You're correct. I'm sorry.
Yes, get them together, Timmy.
So the episode is Life Death Part 2, and in it we're following Storm, kind of where it left off with her and Forge dealing with the adversary. Last time we saw adversary took a big old little chomp out of Forge's shoulder and poisoned him.
Okay, I'm doing not well, bitch.
And so basically we learned that there is a very sacred plant that Storm needs to go get. The journey is going to be very difficult, so she's like, nah, fuck that, I'm still going to go. And Forge is like, I'm going with you, because if you leave me here, girl, I'ma die. Then that, what's that gonna look like? And she's like, my love that I've known for 1 month, you can come with me. You won't slow me down at all. This is gonna be so great. So they go, and as they are making their way to this, he does some spell work to banish the adversary. So they think that, you know, they're good and whatever, but It's the poison that is now the issue. Once they get to the magic cave, the issue then becomes that Storm has to fight her own insecurities, her own fears that we've known about for a very long time, and that she has to go through a very tight space in order to retrieve this magical herb.
Clap if you have anxiety.
And that's when Forge was like, oh, that's why I came with you, because I know that you didn't like tight spaces, so you manipulated me, knowing. Mm-hmm. So, you know what, but you said that we're not supposed to go into our own feelings about the episode, so no, she was a good partner of 1 month and risked her mental health to go get him this magical plant or whatever. Yeah. So they go to do that. At the same time, we're whisked away to a storyline I personally did not care about. Charles is alive, I guess. He's with the Shi'ar, and the big issue there is that him and Lalandra are to be married. Desper, Lalandra's sister, is just like, hell no, that's an Earther. The entire Milky Way is fucking ghetto.
What is this, honey?
So why would we have someone like him come to help rule our planet that don't even make no kind of goddamn sense?
Ooh, the ghetto!
To where ultimately Charles has to be like, you know what? I'm a professor. Let me put on my tweed fucking overcoat and school these people. And he put them in class on some dangerous minds shit. So like I said, it does not even matter. I guess it matters a little bit. Ultimately, what happens there is that he is trying to school the Shi'ar on just how their way of living is very colonizer-y and not very right. He might be making some leeway with him. Oh, because the whole deal is, if Charles is going to marry into the family and into the throne, so to speak, he has to, what was it that they invoked, Mdasha? I think of Ladasha, like that name where it was like L-A-A. So I was like, Dasha, got it. So Mdasha, which is like, basically, he has to get rid of all memories of Earth. He has to turn his back on the X-Men, get rid of all memories of Earth. Lalandra is the one that has to do it, and that way Charles can prove his loyalty. That was set forth by Deathbird. Back with Storm, the big issue becomes ultimately that as she is facing her fears, the adversary returns, and we learn that the adversary is a very real villain, but more importantly, what's been holding Storm back from getting her powers wasn't the gun.
There was that lie.
And Forge's machine did work, but she was the one holding herself back. She was not ready to step back into that power. She was in a place of like, man, it's easier for me to hide as a mutant. I receive so much hate for this. My life is made so hard from the people that all I want to do is exist, and I am different from them. It was easier to fall back and play dead rather than choose to face life, basically. So it wasn't so much a matter of what outside forces prevented Storm from getting back her powers, but rather what was going on the inside. And then she had her whole magical girl moment, grew her hair back with lightning strikes, struck a pose in the midair, said goodbye to that fuck-ass mullet hawk. And then we saw the goddess turn. That was the best part of the episode. But of course, they took us on back to Charles and some shit that we don't care. And ultimately, while he was in this astral plane with the Shi'ar and schooling them, he receives that psychic image. I suppose that is when Genosha happens. He sees this image of like the earth exploding and Gambit is dead. He knows by name who's died. He knows what happens. And he's like, fuck all this nonsense. I have to go back to Earth. I have to go back to X-Men. And then at the very, very end of the episode, Bolivar Trask is like, no, I gave you my DNA for Master Mold. Please, what else? Genosha was so bad. They really tried to make us feel bad for this man. And Sinister is just like, hey, all you gotta do is submit to Sinistar. Like, it was very, very trustworthy.
One more time on that, please. I just need one.
Oh, I got you.
Submit to Sinistar.
That's what he said. That's exactly how he said it. And that was the episode 6, Life Death Part 2 of X-Men 97.
X-Men!
Yay! Excellent.
We should splice these together into like a season recap from every episode.
It's on the agenda. It's on the agenda. That'll be the finale, grand finale. All right, then let's get into it.
Okay, so stage 1, we're with Storm, we're with the adversary, right? Mm-hmm. Woman's trying to help out Forge after the adversary bit him with his dirty, dirty mouth. You know, like Komodo dragons, they don't have poison. Their mouth is just rank.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. They don't. They're not
going?
Actually not so dirty. They infect it and gradually it dies.
Uh-huh.
That's what the adversary did.
Wait, okay. Just from pure bacteria? So no poison, just bacteria. Yeah.
That one,
it's magical rabies.
She had to go to Whole Foods to get some mushrooms to clear that up. That's penicillin they went for.
Okay.
Ain't no spells, ain't no chance needed. They said, go and get some antibacterial wipes.
Right.
Well, I kind of want to start with the Xavier part of the episode first, because I feel like that's the least fun part to talk about, but there might be more to talk about it there. Like, for one thing, the question I want to ask the room, how do you feel about so much Xavier and life death? Because I'm a bit bitter about it, but...
For me, because I've seen the discourse online about like, man, mm-hmm. we thought we were going to get 2 Storm episodes and instead we have these 2 episodes that were kind of chopped up. I guess for me, I see the point, but also in the moment, what they gave us from Storm was so good that it didn't feel like I was lacking for anything because they chose to split the episodes up this way. I don't know why they chose to do that, especially with Motindo and Life Death Part 1. I absolutely felt like Motindo gave me Beach Day, like it was a side episode adventure with Jubilee and Roberto. And kind of the same thing with Charles, like that could have been its own episode. You know what I'm saying? Just these little side adventures that don't matter in the grand scheme of the story right now, although Charles obviously will. But so it's weird. And I wonder if there was a good reason for it, because I feel like this series hasn't really missed yet. There are things that I don't like, but they haven't given a true miss. So I can't be mad at the decision because the payoff was so worth it. So I get it. But at the same time, I'm like, man, I hope that it's just a matter of we had to keep the pace. We didn't want to split up Life Death Part 1 and Part 2 to spread out Storm's story a bit. I don't know the reasoning, but I get why people are upset. Me, myself, I'm kind of just like, whatever on it, because the payoff is worth it.
For me, my issue with it is that I feel like we got the first sort of bit of the Life Death story and then the last bit. And like, there's a lot of really interesting things that Storm does in between that. Mm-hmm. So watching the first episode on the first run, all I could think of by the time we got to that big scene with her is, oh my goodness, they're not going to do the depowered Storm and Cyclops fight. Like, what? I was like, but that to me is my favorite moment of the Life Death sort of story arc. And so I was just like really shocked. And I was like, oh, I wonder if that will come back in another way, which would be all right. Or if it was just something that was shaved down because, like you were saying, they had to like keep a very specific pace. And yeah, I think it's the thing that we've been talking about, I think, since the very start, which is the pacing issues, maybe interacting with the story. Because I think, like you said, yeah, the show hasn't really missed for me. It's just that it's not hit the target the way I want it to. You know what I mean? It's like, you gave me a really cool Storm moment, but like, yeah, I don't know. I think I find myself really torn about it, about like the Shi'ar and the Charles bit specifically. I found myself like really confused as to why we're doing this in this episode. And I know you're doing like a colonialism link in the stuff that's being discussed in both parts, but it just felt a bit tenuous. Yeah, that's where I'm at. How about you, Ash?
You guys are asking a lot of questions. I rest my head against the couch. I open my eyes. I let what happens go in. I say,
Disney, a little gambit magic. Little cayenne, little time.
Good. Okay. I keep it pushing. That is it.
So you're still on the perspective of like, take from it what you can.
You know what? I genuinely think there's a level that might be counterintuitively purist. And we are comics purists looking at a condensation. Okay. You know? And so I think I totally hear what you're saying. That's not me saying that I disagree with any of your points. But I'm also, I think at this point, I watched the episode not surprised, because this is the exact same of every episode. Exactly. Right. Storm and Life Death was exactly what happened to Maddie and Inferno. Exactly what happened to Nathan Summers and that whole thing. Exactly. Everybody's been getting this like...
super condensed.
Yeah. What's the one bullet point this arc? And the one bullet point of the Life Death arc is Storm gets her powers. So they gave you Storm gets her powers back. And it feels like everything's been come down to one sentence, and they give you some fucking sick memes because the little split kick she did... down. It's cathartic, and like she released everything and she fell down, tumbled through the air, and that's something like I've never really seen Storm do like that. Like, she's very suspended, and so watching her play was beautiful. I mean, Forge was dying, but
she passed away.
He'll be fine.
So that was it. I just think it's the one bullet point rule.
Yeah, is why I get that, but like, I don't know, I can't help but mourn, like, because it opens up a lot of aspects of Storm that I really love. The weight of Storm's excellence on her when she doesn't have her power, and how like she relates to that power, and then like how she relates to herself as just like a person, and then like stepping up to the role of the leader, you know, because she fully realizes her own capabilities, even if everybody else denies that. And I say this, I think, specifically because with like the Shi'ar bit, having Deathbird say things like Milky Way Ghetto and Freak Fluids, and then having the Council be really like about like blood purity and all that stuff, I thought that was like, oh, that was an interesting sort of thing to zero in on about the Shi'ar. So for what you were saying, Ash, I think they hit a bullet point with that one. I was like, okay, I quite like the sort of summation of the Shi'ar that you gave, you know, these bird-ass people.
Bird-ass people.
Okay. Also, we got to see like their titty flowers.
Oh, dear.
Which are really weird. I was like really shocked. I was like, what is happening here? I just like it. What is she doing?
Anyway. Okay. You know what? This is our safe space. I was about to say a truth, and then I realized that Tiffy is there.
Oh my gosh.
I think for me, because I am not a comic book purist, but I think that stories have to make sense. Mm-hmm. I'm not a purist of the original source material when it comes to any of these reboots, remakes, refreshes, remixes, whatever. It does not need to be exactly like the original. And I've always said that when it comes to these, but it still needs to be a good story. So I acknowledge that when it comes to X-Men, we're not going to get Storm's entire journey. We're not going to get decades worth, or even in this case, if it's just a couple of years worth of material and what we have in one season from this show that has something to prove coming out the gate. I think it's done a great job of that, but it has something to prove, and it has a whole ensemble of characters and decades of storyline to get through for everybody. So for me, it's one of those things where I have to take a look at it like, yeah, this is what I expect. Expectation is high. The standard and the bar is very high, because I know the story behind Storm and I know what she could be. So obviously I wanted to meet that expectation. The faux hawk, the mullet hawk, coming into play the way that it did was an issue. And I spoke on that in my content. Someone was like, why are you doing a 360? You love her hair. I'm like, well, because my issue was the storytelling with the faux hawk, and they have essentially done it in reverse. She got her hair back, and we kind of got the flip side of it, where her journey, her self-discovery causes her hair to grow, as opposed to in the comics where she cut it off as part of what she was going through and who she was discovering herself to be. So for me, it's kind of like with Avatar. I don't know if y'all saw the Avatar live action series. That was one where they took some liberties with the story and the remixing, but I don't think that they did as good of a job this first season as I'm hoping that they'll do the following seasons. So where it's like, yeah, in the comics it was this, and they flesh out the story this way, and we saw this for Storm. We don't have time for all that. She lost her powers. She fell for this lovely indigenous man. She got her powers back. What's next? Like, that's kind of, and I'm okay with that. If it was a gamble that failed, then it'd be an issue. But they gambled, and in my opinion, the shit paid off. So, you know.
Yeah, they said they make it fit. Well, you got half an hour. You have
30 minutes to tell a story. And it's like, okay, all right.
Do you know that Lady Gaga meme? Like, club, another club. That's kind of what the show is. Yes. Like, fight, another fight. Sinister, Magneto.
Clones, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Betrayal.
Yeah. Horse, bird, purse, mushroom, cave, pink, dogs.
Yep. Bald, inches. X-Men. Okay, so we discovered this episode that Xavier likes to play a pet with Lilandra. And I wish that's something I never wanted to know.
Well, does he like to be a pet for Lilandra? Or did he say that it was tempting and he could bark later? Because from what I got from the situation is that they were still discovering their kinks and exploring them in a consensually safe area. I don't think that he has barked for Lilandra yet, but I think that he's open to the idea, as all men should be.
True.
I think he's got that little tail touched up.
Oh.
Do you think that he wears one?
I know that whatever the galactic equivalent of Amazon is, there's paraphernalia, there's objects.
Here's what gets me. Why is Lilandra not a real one? That's what upsets me. Like, okay, Charles has to forget everything about this life he loved, and you know that he loves it so much. And Lilandra, you got to be the one to wipe his memory. The next morning, yeah, I totally wiped his memory. He doesn't remember anything. Tell him, babe. Earth. And then he barks, and that's how they prove it to everybody. Like, why can't you just roll with me on this one, babe? Like, you ain't a real one. You ain't a ride or die.
It made me realize something. Lilandra is to Charles what Charles is to other mutants.
Yo, can I spit some bars for you real quick?
Say more.
She is an owner of structural power who wants him to help reach her aims and is willing to sacrifice him and his comfort and his past in order to do that. So where Charles always expected other mutants to fall in line with his ideology to help him get what he wanted, Lilandra expected that of him. Like, I remember getting to the end of the episode and being like, you wouldn't do for her what you're asking every other mutant to do for you.
Mm. You hypocritical bitch.
I got to the end of it, you were like, fuck enough. I need to get in this.
I'm real neutral when it comes to Charles. Someone in my community also pointed out that Lilandra does not love Charles. That and the barking thing, while being like funny and kinky, really is more of a reflection of how she views him. She doesn't respect him. She doesn't love him because she expects him to sacrifice so much, because his needs and his wants don't matter so long as she gets to keep essentially her pet. She has a very clear goal and he needs to fall in line with that. And that is not love.
That's really interesting when you think of the way that that line, that doesn't sound entirely displeasing to me, came back. They said the same line. Storm said to Forge the same line that Xavier said to Lilandra, which is before she found out about Genosha on the television, Forge told her maybe we could go to a tropical island, and she said that doesn't sound too displeasing to me, which is the same thing that Xavier said to her pet line. And I found that interesting as a contrast with what you were saying there. Kind of really like presents two different relationships, and one as healthier, even though it has so much toxicity within it, literally sometimes, and one as just being like, it seems to have all the trappings. It's because it's almost like a fairy tale story, right? It's the marrying the prince and becoming sort of a Queen Cinderella is what Xavier is kind of doing. You were saying they're not ride or die for each other. Like, the second something else happened, Xavier was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm going. An interesting development for Charles. I've not seen that from his character on the show because I've been rewatching the series lately, and it seems like we're challenging him a bit more.
I think that's an amazing point, actually. And it makes me think that over the episodes, we've been seeing this theme emerge of the X-Men and their commitment to the struggle destroying or breaking up their relationships. Because it makes me think of the line where Jean was like, I was called out to the universe and I stayed here for you. I stayed here for love.
Yeah.
It makes me think of Rogue sitting there holding Gambit's arms. Like, every relationship they've introduced so far has been torn apart almost immediately. And you're right. There was a parallel there. And it's like how both people were tempted by this idea of love and leaving their responsibilities and releasing their hold or their you know, their call with the X-Men or what they're called to carry. Yeah. And then having that really quickly snapped back to reality for them.
I know that Lilandra's better than I am, because the instant Charles said no, them little gold legs of his, I'd have snapped them back so much. and I'd have tipped him right over. I'd have just put a very gentle.
Wait, no, my time has come. My time has come. My time
put a nice little hand on his chest and nudged him backward. Oh, absolutely. I done spilled my heart out to you. I'm offering you my throne, my kingdom, my plan, and my people. I'm over here beefing with my sister. My people are fighting over here on this giant bridge. You done got knocked out, and you don't tell me no? You don't tell me no? Then you can have
I was going to sit on your eggs.
Charles. You can sit down, Charles. You don't deserve to stand in my presence. Charles, 11-11,
bitch. Okay.
Ooh, she's mad.
11-11, bitch. Oh my god. I need a break. I need a second. I'm sorry.
So what you're saying is you would take the mobility aids from a disabled man over a relationship slight. Hmm?
Be very specific. That disabled man is named Charles Francis Xavier, and I will take anything from him in this world that I am able. His legs, his happiness. If that nigga had hair again, I would take that too. I would take everything from him. Ask me another question.
But clap if you ever wanted to kill somebody.
Next topic. All right, I'm gonna end this because I feel like y'all about to fight.
You invited me onto the show, then you gonna silence me?
Drag her! Slay her! Get him! I'm just fanning the flames. Go after him.
And that
say he lives in the Milky Way.
Stop it.
Talk about his free fluids.
Talk about his free fluids.
Not his free fluids, because Deathbird was bitten. I'm like, how am I supposed to be mad at her? Everything that she says is true.
Can you imagine if one of those old people jumped up out of the seat and pointed down, talk about his free fluids?
I gotta give it to the Deathbird character actress, though. Like, she was there. She's like, you know what? I'm gonna take this section of my episode, and I'm just gonna be the star of the show.
Right.
Thank you very much, Mr. Charles.
But this is not about you.
No, it's not.
If we know the politics of how the Shi'ar see the humans, is Lalandra and Charles's kink in the realm of race play?
Race?
No, we're not doing this. No, ban. Veto. Not on this. Not on my show, bitch. Not on this show, bitch. No, you demon.
Storm.
Fashion the fool.
You weaver of lies. We're not doing this today. I'm not dealing with those ads. I'm not dealing with those replies. You better stop that.
Listen, Tiffy came quick as fuck with that yes, though, so that's what I'm going to do.
Damn it. I'm going to mute that bit of the audio. Just
okay. I'm going to put timestamps of every... I'm going to tweet out timestamps of every time you silenced me.
You know, okay, but seriously though, I just to link it to Storm, actually, it did get me thinking about what this show is doing. Mm. Now that I feel like we're seeing a lot more of the puzzle pieces, we're on episode 6. We're seeing the recurring themes start to recur now. One thing that I started thinking about was the way the theme of identity and reclamation of identity has like come up. Like you mentioned Ash earlier, Jean Grey, and then we were talking about that as well with Xavier. And obviously this episode is a prime example for Storm, but more in relation to how the Shi'ar themselves were presented. It seemed to suggest that healing comes through like that reclamation of identity for Storm, mm-hmm. right? Especially when you think about like the speech that she gave, you are all an echo of who I am and that she is lightning. And there's a sort of idea, the weaving of a communal identity into the self as being what is healing and affirming. And I couldn't stop thinking of that within the context of not just life, death, but then the show itself and what it was doing with Xavier bits here, because we see him give a speech to the Shi'ar about why coexistence is important and assimilation is bad, but he does not convince them. And the last episode, we saw the revolutionary die. I'm like really interested in seeing where this thread is going to leave. I mean, this episode gives me a bit of interest and hope, seems to be placing it in the idea of like community identity being as something of a wellspring that brings you back into power when there is all these things that are swaying you from it. Anyway,
really,
those are my thoughts. At least that it seems to be suggesting and trending that way. I don't know if it's going to take it there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I had a bit of a different take on that because...
Go on.
One of the things that stuck with me when I watched it was that, so like I said, I think Lalandra and Charles was made of inversion, or appeared to me, sorry, it wasn't meant to be, appeared to me to be an inversion of the typical sort of Charles mutant relationship, right? Someone with more power than him, expecting him to fall mm-hmm. in line, sacrifice himself in that mm-hmm. in that endeavor. But then, in order to reassert Charles's power, he does something mm-hmm. that is very Charles, mm-hmm. that is very unrealistic and robs them all of their control. Charles, in order to teach them quote unquote a lesson, literally schools them and puts them in desks like children. And I found it very patronizing.
Yeah, but Charles is wrong. Yeah. I'm not arguing that he's right.
Yeah, yeah, I know. But then his lesson being crashed by the death of the mutants he raised, I thought was a bit of a slap in the face to that idea. He's like, well, let me show you how I do it on Earth. And it was like, you get niggas killed. That's how you do it on Earth. The receipts came crashing through the window. I didn't see what he did as community.
I was still back on what was kind of mentioned earlier, just about the running theme. Well, one, Ash, I completely agree. It's very ironic that you're right. He's showing this is how we do it on Earth. And Deathbird's like, yeah, like I said, fucking ghetto, because that's shit, what is going on? that right there. For me, I think it's also interesting that it was brought up, just this idea of identity and that being a theme throughout the series, because even with Jean and Madeline, and of course, Madeline is now, you know, gone, and we don't know. I mean, I think it's still kind of up in the air for some people, like, are the events of Genosha going to stick? Did we get a glimpse of Cable just as a quick little Easter egg, or is it there actually going to be some time travel business going on? But Madeline and Jean definitely ended their arc for the series for now with this question of who am I? Madeline's going to go discover. We're seeing Jean struggle with that at the mansion. Like, literally, like, I don't know what memories are mine. I don't know what's hers. I don't know what's real. I don't know who's real. And then Storm, the biggest thing for me in that is that Allison Seeley Smith, as we know, voiced Storm and the Adversary. So it just adds this extra layer of, you are all an echo of what I am. She is literally having this conversation with herself. She's literally having this conversation with her insecurities in every layer imaginable, down to the voice actress having a fucking conversation with herself. She's talking to herself in the booth. So, like, I just think the layers of that are so, so deep that I only was looking at it through Storm's moment. But I love your point of it just being indicative of what's going on throughout the entire series, this question of identity, which for mutants, I think is really important in this world of people that want to hate you because who you are. Do you like who you are? Who are you anyway, outside of the hatred that this world continuously puts on you? So I feel like,
hearing him say assimilate, well, I'm paraphrasing, assimilation doesn't work, you know, and coexistence is messy, which seems like, that is not something I would have put in his mouth personally, because he's the idealistic one for me. So I was like, okay, that's a really interesting thing to hear come out of his mouth, and then immediately to be followed with something that should affirm it, but like with like the fact that like, yeah, they're killing all of you're getting people killed, and then sort of the opposing sort of wall of like this empire that isn't going to change, that he's trying to mullify through this idealism of his, right? That he's trying to get to come to his perspective, which isn't working. Yeah, I think that is what it is, trying to use identity as this idea of like we're all together doesn't work anymore. But I think the show seems to be heading in a direction where it suggests that finding partnership or communal sort of togetherness is what is going to be the thing that is healing for mutants.
Definitely. I mean ultimately it's Disney, they ain't gonna say anything different.
Yeah, I mean, I'm taking something out of it that, like, I'm hoping for, right? Like, for me, I'm hoping that it's going to end up with them saying that the win for mutantdom isn't fighting the bad guys, it's the fact that of them celebrating their difference, right? And I feel like having Storm question wanting to be human this episode just, like, pushed me in that direction.
Bearing in mind that Charles Xavier did not decide to do any of this speech before they started letting him know. He was there. Where he was there long enough for them to size up them big metallic golden boots, long enough to get fitted for a golden headset,
which was ugly. I'm so sorry, they didn't like that, man. That was an ugly helmet. That was an ugly helmet.
They did. I mean, they put a spiralizer on his face and they said, honey, this is the height of fashion over here, and he bought it because you know nobody else was dressed like that.
They all talk about him behind his back. They giggle when he walked out the room.
He didn't do shit. He was there for a long ass time, presumably happy with the way things were. And then he was like, hey, let's take all this shit back to Earth. And they said, ooh, no, ghetto, not roaches.
Ghetto, not gonna happen.
And he went, hold on a minute, let me give you a lesson about equality. And it felt very transactional. We'll see. That was another minus for me against Charles Xavier generally. I mean, that book is very thick, but it has another sentence.
You know, you had me after that was a minus for me for Charles Xavier. You didn't have to say anything after that. I was already on your side and printing up posters for you and your cause.
All right. Well, since we're giving minus and pluses, I think it's time for us to give our ratings, which we have not done yet. So who wants to start? Out of a rating of 97, what would you give this episode? Selena Gomez's wig. That is Ash's name on this recording.
Yeah, it's been shorty low. Shout out to Caleb. It's been the Mac returning, and now it was meant to be Selena Gomez's dubious streams, but they wouldn't let me have that many characters. So out of 97, I would give this one, I think, like, a solid 94. Because they're just cramming everything in, and they're making it fit. They've got to amputate some bits. The Shia, who are the Shia? Did they introduce you to those people at all for a second? No. They just turned up, they said, bird people, right. And you had to go with it. That's it. Yeah, one bullet point. it was all right. Listen, they hate explaining themselves. If there's one thing about X-Men 97, they ain't explaining shit. On or get on, like, that's it. And then I think also the fact that Storm, I love that Storm bit. And then I like that she went back and found the same horse she was riding. And looked at him and was like, who's the bad bitch now?
That is hilarious. That is very funny.
Yeah. She was like, last week, you were my modes of transportation and look at me now. Because I'm up right now. And you're so... And she flew straight for it. It was perfect.
How about you, Tiffy? What would you give this episode of X-Men 97?
I would give it a full 97. A full 97. Ooh. Yeah. Because we know that this is Storm's episode. And at the end of the day, at the end of the day, Charles Francis Xavier is not strong enough to take away from anything that Storm has. He never was. He never will be. Hey, but my shot tone, let me grab my tambourine on that room quick and shake this tambourine up real fast. Because it's just a fact. Ain't nothing that Charles, if I was going to dock this episode, it'd have been because I don't care about Charles and what he has going on. But like I said, he can't take nothing away from what Storm has. So it's a full 97 for this episode. Now, when I rewatch it, when the Shi'ar stuff comes up, you might see me walk away. You might say, this is a good time for me to run to the restroom. Or I think I do need a little snacky snack right now. Let me get a little rumbly in my tumbly. Let me go. And I don't want to come back and see my goddess on the screen. And you know what? You're right, Ash. This show expects you to know everything. I was not familiar with the Shi'ar or with Death. With Deathbird. So when we Death first Bird. Saw her. Right. I was like, ooh, she's cool. Who is she? I'm like, oh, no, she's a bad guy. We don't like, oh, she don't like Charles? Wait a minute. Let me see what she's talking Race. About. I was all over the place. This show requires, and I don't face the punk. If I don't know, I do not know. And I research my ass off, but no, yes. The way this show, when she came in, I was like, no, I blinked. I missed a scene. Something skipped. Who is this bitch? I didn't know nothing that was going on. 97.
Yep.
Okay. And for my end, I am going to give this episode, I'm going to give it an 86. Ooh. It would have gotten up to a 90 something if it was a full Storm episode. Mm. But I'm giving demerits for the fact that you made me sit through Charles for that long. But I will say that you're close to the 90s because the second I heard that, in the background when Storm was like riding up with the horses, Dora Milaje just came back in the chat. So I was like, okay, you're getting some points for me for that one. Okay. And we had the adversary. Like, the adversary came up to Storm's face and said, are you proud of your monotone family?
Snipers on me.
Bro, and we're just going to let that one lie there? Sorry, that
called the X-Men boring. Called them bland.
The only weapon the adversary had was a dirty ass mouth, figuratively and literally. We didn't see not one spell. We didn't see nothing. It just turned up, talk shit, bit somebody, dirty mouth. Like,
yeah. I also think I've deducted a few marks because I rebuke the idea of Storm ever thinking that she might want to be human even as a lie to herself. I just do not like that. I just don't like it.
But I think that you should examine why. I think that it's important that they had Storm have that moment of self-doubt because we don't allow Black women to be soft and to be vulnerable and to have moments of weakness. We're just supposed to be strong all the time. And Storm is the pinnacle. Mm. She's the poster child of Black woman strength. That is that Storm. So to see her admit, hey, yeah. I was tired. I wanted a break. That's natural. That's an important message for people, because people that are strong all the time or seen as strong all the time, mm. when you take a moment for yourself, suddenly it feels like weakness and it makes you doubt everything yeah. that you right. have going on. So I think it's out of character from the Storm that we have known all these years, but I think that it's an important mm-hmm. evolution for her character to admit wanting a fucking break from that shit, because it's real. That shit's
right.
real.
You're right.
And also that the adversary used her moment of doubt against mm-hmm. her. It weaponized her vulnerability. Mm-hmm. It was trying to shame her for being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In the darkest moments, it was like, this is what you wanted. And she managed to overcome that. And I still don't know how she won. Did she put wind? She electrified it in the tunnel. Sis's core strength is above the gods. She had like that Pilates freeze in a tunnel that was vertical.
When she had that big old flashlight in her mouth, I was like, your jaw like tired, sis. You ain't holding it. No.
God, yeah.
All right, well.
No prize, though. How did she kill the adversary? Can we just say this is a link to her magical heritage? She can kill a magical demon with her lightning.
Well, I believe what's been revealed since then is that the adversary was banished by Forge, but because what Storm was going mm-hmm. through was very psychosomatic at that point, it was a fight with herself. So if the adversary was like physically there or not, it's kind of up in the air, because Storm's battle was with herself at that point. Forge's machine even worked. She could have accessed her powers at any time, but she needed to get out of her own head. So was the adversary a real physical threat in that moment? I don't think so. I think it was all about Storm overcoming her own insecurities and her self-doubt.
Mm.
And whoever decided that they wanted to have its head turn all the way around.
Some very masochistic, some sadistic ass person that don't like us.
Why was you bringing this to somebody else's club? It's sad.
Yeah, that was psychic damage. I experienced psychic damage watching that.
That, what was it? Delicious self-doubt. Right? You just shut up. Don't talk to me like that. What?
Ew.
Please don't. You are disrespecting my boundaries right now. Can you imagine gentle parenting a villain like the adversary? Like no. We don't use that kind of language. We don't. How can we take these thoughts and spend them to something else? All right?
No dragging mommy into purgatory.
X-Men! Before we get into the final questions, do we have any thoughts that we've not gotten into?
Yes, I'm sick. I am Marvel. Marvel, come here. Come closer. Marvel, I'm sick of fucking Sinister. Wrap it up. Yeah?
Say more.
I need the Sinister shit to be done by 5:30 p.m. today. That's what I need. I don't care where you have to go. I don't care where you have to put him. Take those thorn off teeth. That ribbon motherfucking cape. Mm-hmm. Get rid of it. Yeah, who you have to put in this whole bitch. Toad, Avalanche, whatever Z-Monster you have to find, I would rather. Mm. You could put Rogers in that motherfucking episode as the big bad, and I would prefer it to Mr. Sinister.
May I ask why are you so passionately against Mr. Sinister?
We've been eating this motherfucking meal for 4 years.
Gotcha. Okay.
So homophobia?
This shit is in different areas. Why is he every...
You're feeling the real life Sinister effect, and you're like, no, I don't want to. This is supposed to be fictional.
Yeah, like that video of Azalea Banks going, you niggas are everywhere. I want to share this with y'all. Like, that is me, Sinister.
Silly. How about you, Tiffy? Is there anything that we've not gotten to that you want to get to?
No, I think that's everything. I think you guys give me such great additional insight on things on both ends of the spectrum of like, no, let's look at this more. And also, why? Why look at it more? I think it's such a good balance of
the ash and call it experience.
It's a, you know what? It's a good experience. I'm happy I'm here.
Oh, thank you. You're about to regret everything you say, as I will introduce the last point that I feel like we have not discussed, which is I personally believe that the Xavier and the Lilandra section was giving Swirl agenda.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And I think that as a community, we need to unite in saying enough is enough. Moving on.
I was going to say, Noah, how come you can bring up the swirl agenda, but when we bring up a little bit of race play fetish, suddenly it's an issue?
We're not going to say a little bit of race play, and I took a stance against it. So,
let's talk about it.
All right, fine. Y'all want to get into race play so much? The floor is yours. Go.
Oh, I definitely think that they have cute little nicknames for each other that they be calling each other. He wears a whole little set. He wears a tail. He has a collar. He has a leash with his name engraved on it. Mm-hmm. All of that shit. I fully believe.
I know he lets her call her a Terran. I know he lets her call him a Terran in the bedroom. I know it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. He'd be putting on like a little loincloth.
Not a loincloth.
Like a Neanderthal.
Like, wait, what was it? Bubblegum? What was it with Michaela Cole? That one where she has to do all of it. Do you think that he's doing that?
Done chewing gum.
Oh, it's your bubble gum.
Yeah, he comes in the room like on all fours and he's like, Homo erectus.
I think that she makes him try out different Earth accents. She'll be like, now do Texas. Ooh, now do Californian. And Charles just has to adapt.
Charles, can you address like a Persian cat just once? What are
we? And that man meows. That man meows for her. So yeah, that's what I wanted to get off my chest about that. Thank you for creating a space where we could talk about things like a little bit of race play. Thank you for that.
Okay, that's going to be in the trailer. And that was ungodly. Moving on. Now we're going to move on to a series of questions. We're going to do this rapid fire. So you can say a little bit or a small paragraph about any of them.
Yeah.
Can you, Ash, please give me the loser of the episode?
Oh, shit. Tiffy, please go
first. I
was going
to say, why am I the loser of the episode? Fuck you too, then. Let me see.
No, it's just there were like six names in my head. I was like, please go first so I can check this out.
I think the loser of the episode is, I'm going to say Charles. One, mm-hmm. for existing, but also because, that whole moment of really trying to school them and like, look at on Earth, we do this. This is my way. But like, your way has failed your people so many times. You're just a failure. It feels like you're sweeping in to be the hero in this moment. And maybe that's what you are in your mind, but you'll never be him. You're never that guy. 11-11. To freedom!
I can't believe that has become a shorthand.
It's going to be a hashtag, though. All right, Ash, you're up.
I think it was the guards. The guards who came in with Deathbird.
Oh.
I was so vexed. You mean we can't, like, I know they was pissing. Guardian was there. I've never seen people get mollywopped that effectively over four scenes. So they were my loser. So they got chopped. I don't even know where they went. I think about four of them died.
Oh, there was definitely death in that scene. Yeah.
You just threw four of them off the bridge and it looked very deep down there.
My loser of the episode is each and every one of us Terrans in the Milky Way ghetto. Moving on.
Yes.
Moving on. Tiffy, could you please give me your gayest moment of the episode?
My gayest moment. I think the gayest moment is probably Storm's magical girl transformation midair, because I feel like that's an awakening for a lot of people in a lot of different ways. She hit that little Sailor Mars pose and it was a wrap after that. I think that was the gayest moment. Yeah, you gave us a whole Sailor Moon sequence in an X-Men cartoon. That came from the brain of a gay.
Second one. How about you, Ash?
Gayest moment of the episode was, again, Guardian and... I can't lie. I kind of felt it. I kind of felt it for Guardian this episode.
I know you did.
He did a couple of things. I'm sorry. When he moved that body really fast in front of the shots, it bounced off his chest. I said, oh.
Tonight I'm going to dance for you.
Exactly. Exactly. It happened. And then I appear in the corner. At night. I was, it's also when they're standing in the throne room and he was like, you know, I used to have a man. And he was like, and they were just like reminiscing over his exes, like, a wise Terran.
They really did have a whole moment. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I miss Agnew. That was it.
So your gayest moment is watching Gladiator. Just you watching Gladiator.
Personally, my gayest moment personally, Gladiator was on screen.
All right, work.
moment was when Charles saw the big buff man and it reminded him of Magneto.
Okay, my gayest moment is the fact that Charles Xavier asked whoever it was to paint those gutters into his bodysuit costume. I was like, sis. All right, moving on. Can you, Ash, please give me your blackest moment of the episode?
I mean, I think it has to be Storm.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be, it's Storm's joy, I think. It's Storm's just joy in being herself. When Storm got her powers back and flew up into space. Mm.
Left Forge for dead for 5 minutes.
Listen.
Can we talk about, she let that man, she was just like, you can wait. I'm just going to go for a little stroll.
He's fine.
He was dying. He passed out. He was unconscious. And Miss Aurora said, it's fine. He'll be okay. He 5 minutes? You can do 5 minutes.
Yeah, she said, give me a smooth 15.
I'm just gonna take a run.
Yeah, you danced. And you know what? Honestly, I loved that there was a moment of just like black joy of like self-possessed black joy. It was nice. She just got to embody herself and be happy being who she was for a couple of seconds. So that was
Love that. Tiffy, can you give us your blackest moment of the episode?
That is actually my blackest moment. Not specifically you went into it, not the black joy, although that is beautiful, but her leaving Forge for dead while she experienced her black joy. That very specifically, because you're just like, oh, he was dying, but did he die? He was old. He was fine. He was fine. One would argue that she was able to get the plant, probably flew to him mad fast after that. Let her have her moment. Like, he was good. Like, and first of all, let us not forget that it is because of you that I'm in this situation in the first goddamn place. Because you was the one, you had the gun that made me lose my powers anyway. And then on the flip side of it, it's because of you that I'm out here crawling. I'm a goddess. You got me crawling around in the dirt with this big old flashlight in my mouth. No, you can wait a moment while I enjoy me being me again.
Yeah. You have me in the pipes. In the pipes.
In the pipes.
It's a nigga in here whose head turns all the way around.
My goodness. For my, and my blackest moment is related to both of yours. Also a Storm moment. It is the fact that she could not get one moment of rest before Forge turned on that TV. Right. I was like, hey girl, time for some solidarity. The mutants are dead. Come on, help. I was like, she cannot have a second. She cannot have a moment. She can't even just think. She just turned around for 1 second and all of a sudden she's got a new thing that she has to do. But hey, the blackest woman thing I've ever seen. Yeah. She cannot just sit down and like have a moment to herself because the world is conspiring against.
Where's my tambourine? I got it.
Yeah, because even in getting her powers back came with helping Forge. It was the process of her in service to Forge. So she was back down, she was that depowered. Then she was helping Forge. Like, fucking Charles was up there getting his bald bussy busted by Lander in space. Yeah, he got his weeks. He even got new legs fitted. She got 15 seconds. She got 15 seconds before they said, hey. Clock in.
Did you say Xavier's getting his bald bussy busted?
You know,
I was like, why would you ask for clarification when you know what he said? You know what he said.
I just.
And now you done gone and made yourself upset.
Yeah. Oh, there's poetry inside you.
Okay, I'm just gonna. I can't do anything with that one. I'm just gonna put it to the side and move on to the next one. So. Tiffy, could you? I'm letting Ash stay in a corner for this one. Tiffy, could you please give me your winner of the episode?
X-Men! Oh, the winner, hands down, is Storm. She won the series. Mm-hmm. She won the series because it's been decades since, all respect to Halle Berry. I think that Halle did what she could with material that she was given in the year 2000. So I don't disrespect Halle Berry's name for her portrayal of Storm. But we have been waiting for a Storm like this for forever. So Storm won the episode, won the series, she won the decade. What is there left to win? Because I would like to just give it to her now. We can all go home.
Ash, can you give us your winner of the episode, please?
My winner of the episode is Deathbird.
Oh, say more.
She stood on business. She stood on fucking business. She didn't take shit back. She tried to kill everybody. She came in and she said, "You're a roach. You're stupid. Must sit up. Kill you." Her sister talked back to her. She went insurrection immediately.
And then flew away. That's what got me. Not you flying away.
Boom. She said, as soon as she can't talk shit, she left. That was a real one. Okay. She was on it.
All right. So for me, my winner of the episode is, I have two winners. The first one is the one and only Allison Seeley Smith for her portrayal of Storm and The Adversary. Getting to hear her do a villainous monologue speech, like that was beautiful. Like I just thought she was fantastic this episode. She really differentiated between the voices. It was just amazing. I hope this gets her Annie. Is that the voice acting? Get her something. She needs some hardware for this. And my second winner is myself. And with that one, I will take us into the return of our regular segment. Does a Storm impression. Ice
wins. Storm.
Jesus.
No, you demon. Not a daydream. The executioner's neutralizer was not the only weapon tamping down my gifts. There was that lie, and I believed it. You all are an echo of who I am. So let them thunder, for I am lightning. Thank you very much.
I think that you did a great job.
Thank you very much, Tiffy. You are a true ally.
I am.
And that is why you are now my official coach.
Yay! The rest of the season. I've been hired.
Yay! Oh, yay. All right. Jesus Christ. Just link hands with me. Jesus Christ, we come to you in this time of our struggle. We pray pray for your support. Hold this family together.
Fuck the family.
The family is my husband.
Thank you for giving me a chance to say that sentence. I always wanted to. All right. Thank you so much, Tiffy, for joining us.
I hope you
had a good time. And I thank you so much. You are a delight. I'm so glad you are our first official returning guest. I'm already sending you the invite to return, not just for the finale, but the second season.
Yay!
Please just make that happen.
I will.
Yay!
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure as always.
Thank you so much. This episode was hosted by Asha Lane of The Immortal X of Words. You can find that everywhere you get your podcasts. And it was hosted and produced by Khalid and Nas of Referential. You can also find that podcast everywhere you get your podcasts. Did you know that every Saturday, Tiffy has a watch party on her Discord? If you want to get together with some X fans, then head on over to her social pages and the show notes where you'll find a link. You can find Tiffy at Tiffy Starchild on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. You can find Ash at Van the First and me at Also Perp everywhere. And we're officially opening up the mailbox. We are planning a special episode once the season ends. So send those questions and comments and concerns in to 97sessions@gmail.com. But you got to make sure to follow both podcasts because we'll be alternating. So episode 6, Life Death Part 2, is going to be on the X of Words feeds, while episode 7, Bright Eyes, is going to be on the Referential feed. I'll see you there. And so on until episode 10, the finale, where we'll go back to sharing. And give us 5 stars and a nice rating. Make us want to come back. All right. Thank you for listening. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Eleven. To freedom!